For joining us today is Destination Health. We will do 1 or 2 hours, depends on your questions. Calls are a little light right now, and there's plenty of room for questions, so I would jump in quickly. If you have a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all, go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and we will get to you shortly. We're going to get started in just a second.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, food, fitness, nutrition, diet, lifestyle, disease, drugs, training, supplements, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. There's a lot going on today, but I also know that you've always got questions, so we will get to your questions today as well. And I want to welcome Kim. Kim, welcome.
Hi there, Kevin. I was a little late to the party today.
No, you weren't. You're right on time.
Okay, okay. I had to get my Kleenex, my water, my Halls.
Getting
to a coughing attack
You're right on time. Boy, you know, we always talk about it. It's kind of crazy. We, you know, we're a small company. We try to do a lot of things. We always have projects going on. I didn't think it was possible to get any busier, but we're all really, really busy. The industry is, you know, very busy itself. The tax law change is really making things for me a little crazy right now. Not only, you know, the original bill was 1,000 pages, and I read that early so I could get a head start on it. Then the final bill was 500 pages. That changed, so I had to go back and read that. And a lot of people got this wrong. A lot of people in the industry got it wrong and put out wrong information. And it's much harder to fix, you know, what's already been put out there. I wish some of the news outlets and magazines would have held off until they had time. They literally published articles the day it got signed. And by the way they wrote the articles, I knew they hadn't read those 500 pages that I stayed up all night reading. But because it was in a magazine, now I spend all my time fighting with people because they're like, no, you're wrong. Here, look, I saw this. So that's kept me busy. In fact, I have done 4 interviews for magazines over the last week about this because they wanted to get it right. So I did 4 interviews with them. I was on Freewheeling, the radio show on the same channel here yesterday, I guess it was, and I'll be on again Friday. So Friday I'm doing 3 hours. Yesterday I did 2.
Oh my God.
Plus my usual hour. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus my usual hours. And I created a calculator, and I put a lot of time into this calculator, but it's by the time, see, the timing was a little unfortunate, and I'm actually going to wrap this all around health in a minute. The timing was a little unfortunate. I'm glad we got it done. I'm very, very glad, because this bill, tax bill, was good for everybody I've run through the calculator so far. There's a lot of good news about this. I'm excited about it. But we got it signed on the last week of the year, and it went into effect on January 1st. Well, it's going to take months and months for the IRS to write their new forms, write their new regulations. Then once that's done, you have to wait for the software companies to update all of their tax software. And I don't want to wait for that, because there are decisions people should be making now, especially owner-operators. So I basically wrote my own calculator, which when you're dealing with taxes can get pretty complicated. But I'm happy with it. I got it done. Now I can run scenarios for people really quickly. So, and we're doing that for free, by the way. If somebody wants to, we've created a form. It's up on Facebook right now. We'll get it up on our webpage, on our homepage. That takes a little bit longer because I have to get Aaron and the programmers involved. But they'll get on that. I have a tax group on Facebook. That's the easiest way to find everything right now until we get our site updated. But everybody's on Facebook anyway, so I'm going to leave it there. And it's a good group. It gives me one place to go answer questions, post new information. And I posted a link to the form. People fill out a short form, couple questions, submit it, and then I will run a tax analysis for them and show them how this new tax law is going to affect them. And so far, it's all really good news. I've run some scenarios already where an owner-operator will pay $7,000 less in tax this year.
Wow. What is that attributed to?
One really, really big thing. Yeah, a couple things, but one really big one. This one, I was totally blown away when I saw this, and this was kind of a last-minute change. Without getting too complicated, you know, the big corporations got a big tax cut. The corporate tax went way down, which I think is awesome. We needed that. We had the highest corporate tax in the world, and it stifles business. So I'm glad that went down. But then they said, wait a minute, we're giving the big corporations this tax cut, but the country really runs on small companies. What are we going to do for them? And it wasn't really clear what they were going to do. It looked like they were going to actually create a tax rate for small companies, which there's never been one. It's small companies, the owners pay the tax at their own personal rate, which means it's all over the board. So I thought they were going to come out with this tax rate for small companies, which would have been complicated. And at the last minute, they said, look, we're going to make this simple. Instead of a tax rate, you'll still pay tax at your personal rate, and those brackets all went down, so that's part of the savings. But they are giving every business, whether you're a sole proprietor, LLC, S-Corp, or partnership, you get to deduct 20% of your net revenue without paying any tax on it. So we have owner-operators now netting just right off the top, that we've never had anything like that ever. So, you know, the scenario where somebody saved over $7,000 this year, they're one of the owner operators. You know, Matt called me the other day. He took home over $100,000 from his operation last year. He did really well. Well, those are the guys. You make 90 or 100,000 net, and you're going to pay about $7,000 less in tax this year.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always felt we had our own business. This was 17, 18 years ago. And I always felt, you know, our country does not do well by small business owners. It was just really hard to have your own business. I was floored. It was a good learning experience.
Yeah. But you know, you get killed on Social Security and Medicare because when you're an employee, your employer has to pay half. When you become, you know, self-employed, you have to pay all of it. That's a big hit. You know, so you don't even get to deduct your own health insurance. You have to pay for your own health insurance out of your pocket. You don't get to deduct it as a business expense. That's crazy. You know, those are the kind of things that I've always thought they penalize small businesses. Trump, whatever else you want to say about him, he has been very, very business friendly. So far, his track record is for every one new regulation that's been written, they've eliminated 16.
Oh, my gosh. So are you
optimistic? Yeah, that's his average right now.
So for that, to put in such a big tax break in that, then I mean, personally, because I don't know taxes, and I am grateful for someone like you that'll sit and read those pages, because poke my eyes out doing that. I just can't imagine. So I really, really, I appreciate somebody like you who dives into it, and you're completely fascinated because, again, you're a teacher, so you read it knowing you're going to bring it back to the masses and help us and teach us. So I am thankful for that. So my thought was, not knowing taxes very well, is that, you know, with all this big stuff going in, what's going to, you know, what's the negative? What's, like, where's all this money coming from, or how,
so,
you know?
So here's the argument, and we could get 20 economists and ask them this question, and we're going to get 22 different answers. The economy is complicated, so that's why we could argue it back and forth forever. Here's the fear. You know, some people said, oh, well, this was only a tax break for the rich. Absolutely not true. This was a tax break across the board. Almost everybody will pay less tax. Some people will pay significantly less tax. Well, then they'll argue that, well, the lower end didn't get as big of a cut. You're right. That's absolutely true. The low end doesn't pay any tax sometimes. We give them money back. Mm-hmm. How can you give them more than that? You know, and it's all percentages. So clearly an owner operator who was, you know, successful enough to net $100,000, his 20% deduction is going to be twice as much as somebody who only netted 50. I mean, that's just percentages, but I think that's right. Mm-hmm. That's how it should work. So, but then there's the fear of, well, if everybody got a tax cut and the country's already in this huge deficit, isn't that just going to make it worse? Well, let's talk about that when we come back. And there is a health component to this. We'll get to it. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford, this is Destination Health, not Destination Tax, but this is important. This is Destination Health, and Kim and I are talking about the new tax bill. It does have an effect on health insurance, and there was another big announcement around health from the Trump administration that I'm going to talk about. So, Kim, that is a fear. If everybody's getting this big tax cut, where's the government going to get all its money? Well, first off, the government needs to stop spending so much, and maybe this is one way to force them. But the idea is that these kind of targeted tax cuts, giving corporations cuts and giving especially small business this big cut, is that it will stimulate the economy. That, you know, now that we have more money, we'll hire another person and that person will have a job and more money and they'll go buy things. And that's the idea, that yes, the tax rate, it's kind of like, you know, I currently sell something, I'm just making this up, for $100. And I sell 10 of them a day, so I make $1,000 a day. But is it possible that if I lowered my price to $80, I'd sell 15 of them? And I'd make more money, even though I'm charging less. The same idea here. If we lower taxes, maybe we can stimulate the economy so that there's a lot more money being paid tax on. That's the idea. And it worked in 86 when Reagan did it. It worked when Kennedy did it. So it's been done by Republicans and Democrats. Kennedy's was one of the most successful. He put in a big tax cut and it stimulated the economy. Here's another way, though. The corporate tax rate was important. Our corporate tax rate was the highest in the world. We were tied with Japan. So there are American companies that have, the estimate is about $15 trillion in cash sitting in other countries because they don't want to bring it into the U.S. and pay that high corporate tax rate on it. Okay. Apple announced that they are going to bring back $200 billion in cash. That's one company. They are bringing $200 billion back into the country, and they will pay tax on it. So they're going to pay it at the lower rate. I think it's down to 21%. I didn't really pay attention to the corporate number. I think it's 21%. It used to be like 35. So Apple says, oh, you know, we don't mind paying tax on it. We just weren't going to pay 35, the highest rate in the world. We'll pay 21, and we'd like to get the cash back into the country. So now there's $200 billion at 21% that the government's going to get their tax from. And
that's awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah. And now Apple has $200 billion that they'll, you know, open stores and, you know, hire people and pay out dividends to their shareholders. And that's just one company.
Okay. It's encouraging.
Yeah.
And I feel bad. I haven't got to listen to some of your tech shows on the weekend. So I know you're doing a lot for it. So that's
awesome. Yeah, so we will continue. So there is a health component here. Being able to deduct your healthcare costs has always been difficult. It's even more difficult now. The odds of you getting a tax deduction for your medical costs is slim to none. It confuses people because if you ask the question, are medical costs deductible? The answer is yes. But then we got to go through, but you have to have this and this and this and this percentage of that. And you got to. So most of the time, the answer might as well be no, because most people don't qualify for the deduction when you go through all the different hoops. The other big problem with health insurance, and this is a totally different, we're off taxes now. Now we're on to health insurance, and this is a health show. So this doesn't have anything to do with health insurance and taxes, just health insurance in general. The one thing I have never, ever been able to understand, the problem we have in this country is if you have a pre-existing condition, it was impossible to get health insurance. Certain conditions, you could just forget it. You were not going to get health insurance unless you belong to a group. Like if your employer, I mean, if you have a job and they have health insurance, everybody gets accepted. Because that's a group plan, and that's how that has to work. The group has to accept everybody. So, again, the self-employed, the business owners were the ones that were penalized on this. And I've fought this my whole life. I've always had insurance, but I've always had to pay for it myself, and I've had to pay a lot, and I don't get to deduct it as a business expense. But I often wondered if an employer can be a group and get a group policy. Why can't an association? You know, because most self-employed people belong to some sort of association and they're big groups and they all do the same thing, but it's been illegal, completely impossible to get a group health insurance policy. The only group that qualifies is an employer. Everybody has to work for the same company to be part of the group. And I've often wondered, why do they do that? That why would it be so restrictive? Well, they shouldn't have. It was just one of those stupid laws, and Trump is changing it. This is going through the legal process right now, and he is going to open it up to any kind of group that wants to organize, and you have to formally organize it, but it won't be that big of a deal. And once you create a group, then anybody in that group will qualify to get health insurance with the group. It's such a simple thing, and it could have made such a big difference, and we're finally getting it. So that's exciting, to the point that, not that I need another project, but I'm considering forming an owner-operator association just for that reason.
Oh, well, I bet you'd get a lot of people jump on that one.
I did this once. I had a company called The Alliance, and our goal was to form an association to bring all these benefits to small owner operators. And we really thought that there was I had this workaround. I thought we were going to be able to do it for the health insurance thing. And in the end, it turned out we just couldn't. There was no way around that law. I tried everything. And then I ended up selling the company when I started the radio show. But that was the goal of that company. That was supposed to grow into an association. And it was all about health insurance. When we got to the point where we found out you know, after paying lawyers a lot of money, that there was just no way around that. We had to scrap the association idea. So now I'm thinking, you know, and there are lots of other things we could do with an association, but we needed that one big reason to go through all that trouble and cost and all the setup, and this could be it. So I'm keeping an eye on this. It looks like it's got a very, very good shot of going through.
Nice. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, and then we will specialize in HSAs. Because I think that's all always, you know, a great option for people who are self-employed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So when is that?
Other than
that, when is that on the? Is that in a vote?
You know, it's going through the legislative process now. So, yeah, it, you know, you gotta, the House has to create their bill, the Senate creates their bill, then they vote on them both, and then if they both pass, then they create a combined bill, and then if that passes, the president looks at it and see if he's still willing to sign it. And, you know, we could be a couple months, but I'll stay on top of that. And as soon as we know something, and I'm already going to start, you know, putting out some feelers and some ideas on the association. So we're ready.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I'll do that in my spare time.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't have a lot on health. My sleep has been awesome lately, and I am so grateful for that. Yeah, it changes everything. Something a little interesting was happening. Well, I've noticed a pattern now, and I think I talked about this last week. You and I both use the Zoom. Well, you're using your new Garmin, but you still wear the Zoom. Mm-hmm. And that little chart I talked about where it kind of measures the balance of your nervous system and the strength. So, you know, it gives you an indication of how strong both nervous systems are and which one's dominant or are you in balance. And, you know, it's either sympathetic and parasympathetic, or the easier way to remember it is fight or flight. That's the stress response we don't want to be in too often, or rest and digest. That's where we'd like to spend most of our time. The interesting thing is, as my sleep gets better, the strength of both systems goes up. I am like way up at the top of the chart now. Because I've been so busy and I have so many projects, I love working really early in the morning, like 4 o'clock. But I'm not usually tired. Even if I get up at 4, I'm still not tired till about 10. So I've been trying to be real disciplined that I'm always in bed between 10 and 10:30. I'm not even reading in bed anymore. I don't want any other distractions. But if I go to bed at 10:30 and get up at 4, you know, that's only, what is that, 5.5 hours?
Yeah, not for him. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little short. So I've noticed an interesting trend with that, and we'll talk about that right after this when we get back. Stick around. Kevin Rupp. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. So, Kim, here's the pattern that I've noticed. When my sleep quality stays up and it's been really good, then the strength of my nervous system stays way at the top of the chart. But when I short my sleep duration, like I've been doing, you know, probably every other day for a while now to get up and work on these projects, I go full blown fight or flight dominant. I mean, it moves far to the right. And the recommendation is that that's not necessarily a bad thing. You don't want to stay there too often, though, or too long. And what I notice on those days, I can get stuff done. I'm efficient, high energy. I'm clicking through things. But if something goes wrong, I don't handle it very well. And when I don't short my sleep duration, then I move back over to the balanced or even into the rest and digest dominant. I still get a lot of work done, still feel great, but things don't bother me as much. You know, it's a whole lot easier to just go with the flow. So it's kind of interesting. And today, I got a decent amount of sleep last night, and I'm right back in the kind of balanced mode. But yesterday, I was way up at the top right corner of that chart, higher than I'd ever been. And I had a good day until about mid-afternoon, and then everything was just annoying me. I just decided to knock off a little yesterday. But it's interesting to see how accurate some of those measurements really are.
That is good, because I'm experiencing the same thing with mine. I have got that upper respiratory thing going, so the coughing is insane. So my sleep has been terrible, and all my scores just took a huge nosedive. I haven't been measuring
fast
as much to notice that with your moods and stuff like that. That's kind of fun. That's fun to do, and I appreciate, you know, that's cool that you recognize that too, you know, and you can adjust. It's crazy. So yeah, sleep, like we talked about last time. Priceless.
Really important. Yeah. And the app is kind of cool, because on those days, you know, yesterday it said, look, your nervous system is powered up. It's a great day to get things done, but you are, you know, fight or flight dominant. So just pay attention. If things start to annoy you, take a break, do some meditation, maybe, you know, some high intensity, short duration exercise. So it gives you ideas, you know, what kind of things you should work on days like that, what kind of things you should watch out for. And it was interesting because, you know, I started to notice that I was just getting annoyed when I shouldn't have been, and I wasn't being as productive late in the afternoon. I was busy, but not, you know, as productive. And I thought, I'm just going to take a break. And, I relaxed, meditated for a little bit, felt a whole lot better, and then worked on low stress projects for the rest of the day.
Yeah. You know, I think that's good for all of us. We don't necessarily need to have a thing to measure to know that, but we all know when we haven't slept well, or, you know, we also know when we're more agitated and that. And it's good to have that toolbox to go to of like, you know, I need to take a break. Or like you said, like open your app and do a 5-minute meditation to just get yourself reset and then go forward, because a lot of times we just try to plow through that, and it's not good for us. It's not good for the people we interact with. And I think that's what has been, we've noticed with people, is just with all the focus on health, is just the awareness of our body and our minds and our moods. And that's just such a good thing. So yeah, it's a daily thing.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. You know, we talked a lot about this with food. Be aware of how food affects you. You know, isolate certain foods and you know, see how you feel after you eat them, and be aware of your body and what's going on. And now, you know, I certainly do that with food. Now I'm doing it with, like, sleep and stress and mood and, you know, all those other things. And it's really interesting because it does make a difference. If I would have tried to push through yesterday, it would have been a disaster, and it was more productive to actually take a break, get away from the work, meditate a little bit, and then choose projects that needed to be done. Maybe they weren't as urgent or a big priority, but they weren't so stressful either. So, you know, I was still working, I was still getting things done. It just wasn't high stress stuff.
Yeah, that's great. And then you go to bed, you know, lay your head down at night, and you can reflect back on your day and, you know, with a smile, with it was good. And that's just,
yeah.
Compounds
and
helps you sleep better.
Worked. I got a great night of sleep last night and woke up early again today, ready to go. But what do you say we get to some calls? Looks like they're piling up.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, let's do that. Let's start off in Texas. Henry, welcome to the program.
Greetings, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate all the work you do, man. I mean, it's a lot of work you do.
Well, you're welcome. What can we help you with today?
I got one saying I keep telling everybody about with the taxes. I've never had a poor man write me out a check. I've always had rich people turn around and write me out a check. My question is health-wise. My wife has had problems with thyroid problems, and lately she's been going through this battle now, 4 years, and they finally got it under control. And in the neighborhood, there's people that have thyroid cancer, and they got all different problems of thyroid, and it's like, it's just kind of weird. You have this whole section of people in this area within like a 10-mile area. It's like everybody, like 1 out of 4 people have problems. And it's constantly, no matter who you talk to.
Yeah. I'm not going to say there couldn't be a local component, especially if it's cases of cancer. Then, you know, at some point, somebody may need to look around and say, wait a minute, is there some sort of unique toxin around here that could be contributing to this? But I will tell you this, thyroid problems are becoming rampant, just like many of our autoimmune conditions. This poor lifestyle, all the things we talk about, too much processed food, too much sugar, too many additives, too many chemicals, too many dyes, too much glyphosate, all the things we talk about, it's coming home to roost. It's been hurting our health for a long time, but I think we're reaching a tipping point where it is becoming really rampant. And thyroid is a very sensitive organ, and it's a complicated organ. And when it comes to women, it's even more complicated because it's so hormone dominant, and women are just more complicated hormonally than men are. So we tend to see a lot of thyroid problems with women. And the other thing that will cause thyroid problems is a low fat diet, because the thyroid is so hormone dominant. And we need lots of good fats and good cholesterol in our diet to build good, strong, balanced hormones. Well, who's more likely to go on a low-fat diet, women or men?
Women, hey, definitely. It's undeniable.
Yeah, across the board.
That's my wife.
Across the board.
That is definitely
right.
My wife.
So you take the fact that they're already more complicated, they need really good, balanced hormones, and they're much more likely to be on a low-fat diet for long periods of time. And that's why we've got a rampant thyroid problem with women.
And the other thing is, when they have thyroid problems, they keep saying, oh, it's menopause. That's what they told my wife forever.
Exactly.
Oh, you're going through menopause.
Well,
it's not always.
Technically, they're not incorrect. Menopause exacerbates the problems because menopause is a huge shift in hormones. So if you take somebody that's already hormone deficient, their hormones are out of balance, they've already got some thyroid issues, and then we pile menopause on top of that, many times that is when the problem really becomes bad and comes to the surface.
Oh, okay. So that's basically when it comes to life.
Now
it's about the menopause.
Yeah, it doesn't have to happen. You know, if we have a woman who's healthy, she's eating a good, clean, whole food diet, lots of healthy fats, there's nothing wrong with her thyroid, and she goes through menopause, you won't see those problems. Menopause is a natural thing. But when you're already whacked out, that's a big hormone shift, and it can really screw things up. Let me get to a break. I'll come back, Henry. I want to see if there's a question in there I can help you with. You just talked about it in general. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Robinson. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. We're talking with Henry in Texas. Henry, there is an excellent book on all of the thyroid issues, because there's all kinds of things that can go wrong with our thyroid. There's, you know, Hashimoto's, Graves, you know, just low thyroid function, overactive thyroid. There's multiple ways we measure, you know, thyroid. And like most things, the traditional medical community is not doing well on this. Their answer is always drugs and surgery. They have no problem taking out somebody's thyroid and then putting them on synthetic hormones for the rest of their life. The natural community, there are a lot of people that really specialize in thyroid because it is more complicated. There's a book and a website and a program by Isabella Wentz. She's a pharmacist, so she has all the medical training as well, but she believes in the natural approaches. She will use some drugs early on to solve a couple problems, but her goal is always to get to the point where the thyroid treatments are natural. And it's just thyroid is complicated, so I would highly recommend you look up her book. Kim, do you remember the name of the book?
She's got two of them. She's got the Hashimoto's Protocol and the Root Cause.
You've said it enough.
Okay. Pharmacist.com.
Yeah. Kim, what was that website? Thyroidpharmacist.com?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thyroid. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, all of her material is top-notch. I've read the books. It's easy to understand, as easy as you're going to be able to make thyroid. She clearly tells you exactly what tests you should be asking for, how to diagnose those tests. They're step by step. Anybody, you know, that has any kind of thyroid condition, I would highly recommend her work.
Because my wife has been going back and forth to the endocrinologist now, what, 4 or maybe 5 years, and they finally got it somewhat in check. But it still has blood pressure going crazy. Cholesterol is out of whack.
Well, see, that's the problem with the medical answer, which is usually drugs that cause all kinds of other problems. And then we need to take another drug for that problem. And that's her book is called The Root Cause, because she's not trying to cover up symptoms. She's going to get to the root cause of why the thyroid is malfunctioning and fix that so that the body can just work the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. See, it's like I told my wife, I said cancer and this, that, and the other. I says, I remember when I was a kid growing up on the farm, it's like the only time you ever heard cancer was farmers, and that was from the chemicals that they used. And I said, now
right.
It's just running around rampant now, and it's what, like 55 years. In 55 years, it's like, it's crazy.
What happened to all the money we keep spending on cancer prevention and cancer cures? Doesn't seem to be helping much, and it's never going to. I think, you know, you and I realize this, the health side of this community realizes this. Drugs and surgery and procedures are never going to fix our problems. Our problem is what we eat and how we live.
Right.
All right, let's get to some more phone calls. We're off to Indiana. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim. I got a gal that been having troubles with diverticulitis, and is wondering, she should be listening in today, so hopefully she is, and wondering what causes it. Is it an autoimmune disease, and what should she be eating, and what should she be doing?
Yeah, this is one that isn't really autoimmune. It is more of a kind of a straightforward digestive issue. Rather than go through a long explanation of how we get it, I'll talk about how you get rid of it because it's more important. Diverticulitis is best treated with an elimination diet, kind of like GAPS. I'm not using the GAPS diet, but using a similar approach. And there is, I've even seen, I'm trying to remember if there was a specific name for it. I think there is a diverticulitis diet, again, on the natural side. I'm trying to remember, looking through some of my notes to see if there was a specific name for that. There may not be, but I can give you a rough idea of what you're going to do in about four stages of eating, which is, again, kind of the idea behind an elimination diet. What I would recommend is that for, you know, as long as she could handle it, and this is an individual, I would do like a bone broth fast. So bone broth, water, bulletproof coffee would even be okay. I would stay away from dairy if she's at all sensitive to dairy. So we want to give her digestive system a good long time of healing and not having to deal with solid foods. So the bone broth is ideal because it has all the healing components for your digestive system, and it's very easy to digest, so it's going to give her digestive system a rest. And a good bone broth fast is just good in a lot of ways. The second stage, and again, that might be 48 hours, it could be a week. I mean, it's really up to her how long she wants to fast. The longer you fast with diverticulitis, probably the better off you are. The more you can give your digestive system a rest, the better it's going to work. After that first stage, however long it is, you can go to juicing. I would juice more vegetable than fruit, but we want to get rid of a lot of the fiber out of the vegetables and fruit because that, at this point in the process, that's what her body's having a hard time with. We don't want to give it too much fiber. So the first stage, we've eliminated fiber completely. Second stage, we're going to bring in fruits and vegetables, but we're going to juice them so that they're, again, easier to digest, but we're adding in more nutrients. In stage three, and again, you do stage two for as long as you can handle, you know, just juicing. Stage three, you can start to bring the fiber-rich foods back in. So we can go to some raw vegetables or lightly steamed. If she's doing grains, which I wouldn't recommend, you know, make sure that they're like sprouted and, you know, soaked and sprouted, but I would avoid grains completely. You can bring in higher fiber foods like avocados are fairly easy to digest, but they're higher in fiber. And then again, you do that a week, two, however long you feel comfortable with it. And then stage four, you can go back up to the recommended amount of fiber, like 25 to 35 grams a day. Things like sweet potatoes, you know, root vegetables, beans, those kind of things. that are probably really hard for her to digest now. But if we give her digestive system a rest and work back into it in these stages, she's going to see a lot of relief, and it may even clear itself up completely.
Okay. All right.
There are some.
Is there any book? Is there any?
Help. I don't think I've read a book specifically on diverticulitis. I've gotten my information from a lot of different places. There are some supplements that can help. IPS, which is our gut healing supplement, is a good one. Digestive enzymes are good because the better we're able to break her food down, the less aggravating it's going to be when it does get to the intestines where the problem is. So
like
really
probiotic?
What we're doing, probiotics are excellent. Yeah. Digestive enzymes, probiotics, stomach acid if she needs that kind of support. What we're really doing is, one, trying to give her digestive system a long rest, and then trying to get her digestive system healthy again with some of the supplements and the right foods.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's a tough one because it's a very, very restrictive diet, but the more you can restrict in the beginning and the longer you can do it, the quicker she's going to see some relief from the symptoms, and this can clear itself up. Well, Kim, any final words?
Yeah, no, with that lady too, I hope, you know, that she incorporates a whole good diet. They recommend paleo or something so they get some of the good, like you said, sweet potatoes and stuff. So I hope it's not just to heal, it's to create a lifestyle, and we're here for questions for that.
Very good point. Thank you for that. We've got to wrap this up, but we'll do it again real soon. Thanks for joining us. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always the hard work, master the journey. Be Kevin Russell. All right, we're going to do a second hour. I'm getting it set up now, so here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs. Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, food, fitness, nutrition, diet, lifestyle, exercise, drugs, disease, training, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. Kim, welcome.
Hi, Kevin. So glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. You know, one of the things I'm looking forward to this year, 2018, I've been talking about this a lot. There's just a lot of really good news right now. You know, the economy seems to be doing really well. The stock market is doing so well, it's starting to worry me. We are like setting stock market records every single day. I can remember when I first started getting involved in finance, and I went to a big financial seminar, and I was actually there in the seminar on the day they started referring to as Black Monday. We had huge meltdown in the market on the first day of the seminar. It was kind of interesting. But back then, if I remember right, the Dow was in like the 6,000 or 7,000 range and took a big hit. The Dow is now over 25,000. That is just numbers I never thought we were going to see, not in my lifetime. So I'm almost a little worried about the market itself, the stock market, because sometimes when, you know, we get to this point, it's the sign of maybe a bubble. But the economy is doing really well. The fundamentals are good. We just got this big tax break we talked about on our last Destination Health show, and I've talked about on every show, because this is a big deal. It's a big deal for business. It's a big deal for our country. Our economy is complicated. Anybody that tells you for sure, well, because of that, this is what's going to happen, they're either, you know, fooling themselves or they're just lying. It's next to impossible to predict something as big as our economy. But the signs are good. So I'm excited about the industry. I'm excited about us as a company. We're growing. We're helping a lot of people. I want to help more people. And I look at all the projects we've got going on and all the projects I'd like to work on. And I just know this is going to be a really, really busy year. So what I'm excited about is everything I've learned about nutrition and sleep and stress. I think that I'm going to be able to manage that a lot better this year. You know, in the past when we got this busy, my health suffered for it. And I don't want that to happen this time. As much as I want to help people, I can't help anybody if my health suffers. You know, we have to take care of ourselves first. But I'm excited now to know that I understand how you can work that hard and push yourself that way and stay healthy. You have to make time for those other things we talk about. You know, I have to be disciplined on the diet is easy for me. That is just a no-brainer now. And that's the beauty of when you create habits, then they become easy. You know, it's a habit. It just happens. Mm-hmm. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to work at it. Now I'm working on getting my sleep and my stress habits so that they're automatic. So that, you know, I just meditate every day without even thinking about it. I go to sleep at the same time, get up at the same time, keep good sleep hygiene. I mean, all the things I know, now I need to practice them over and over and over until they become habits. And then I could see how you can really push yourself and put that much time into work and stay healthy doing it.
You know, that's really neat. I was reading a book about minimalist mindset. And I learned, it became apparent to me when we moved, when we had to move 2.5 years ago, how much crap we let into our life and into our homes. And,
right.
And, you know, and so we purged all that. So I was really careful, like, and I liked it. I mean, suddenly, and you don't realize what clutter might do. And I might even say, like, you know, too many pictures on a wall, you know, something like that, that we think is great, but we have to step back and look at it. So I've been really careful down here when we moved of what I bring into our home, into our life, to not clutter it. And, you know, that could be physical things, but there's also other things we let in, you know, like with technology and TV, all that kind of stuff. And there was one line in this book that just really stuck out with me. And it said, if I wanted to add something to my life, I was going to need to focus on what I would be eliminating first. And, you know, you can't just keep adding things to your life, you know, and like that, even with health, you know, all the different things we're learning and prepping for your truck and prepping for home and that kind of stuff. It takes time and it takes a intentional effort. Just like you talking about sleep, you have to intentionally do that. And there might be some things you eliminate from your day to make, bring sleep up on a priority. And this is just something I've been focusing on this week too, is just to take a look around and be aware and say, okay, where is the priorities at and what goes down the list or that can be eliminated to make it a priority. Because I'm sure in the past when you did that project after project after project, you didn't even think about health. You just, you know, you just
right.
kept doing it.
Just push through. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, but now
you,
we know.
One
now
of the
know.
Things I, now we know. That's right. And that's the whole point. You know, we want to get better, learn more. But, you know, I think it's more important to do what you know. You know, there's so much we already know that we don't prioritize enough and do. So it's not mm-hmm. like you have to learn mm-hmm. all this new stuff about health.
Right.
We know. I mean, we just have to do more of it. And, you know, you mentioned, you're right. If something's going to change, it almost always means you have to give something up. And what I gave up to improve my sleep was something that's very, very dear to me. And that is, I don't read at night anymore.
Mm. But
I love
it probably
reading.
Comes back.
I mean, it's
because you're rested, then you're rested. I bet it comes back to you. Like, you think you're giving it up, but I bet you find for all you teach us, you read so much, but you probably find a different place for it because
you feel better all around
in general.
Yeah, I have to put it into a different place in my day. You know, it seemed logical, you know, with all the reading I do, to read late at night. There's nothing else going on. There's
mm-hmm.
nobody distracting me. You know, I can read anywhere. So I would read in bed. What I realized was, though, reading even like a trashy novel, I mean, almost any reading stimulates my mind. And that stops mm-hmm. me from sleeping as well. So as mm-hmm. much as I love reading and as much as I thought that was a great use of my time to read at that time of night, when I stopped it, my sleep improved. So, but what I do find, you're right. Now, because my sleep is so much better, the time that I do set aside during the day to read is more productive. I don't have to read the same thing four times before I finally get it.
Yeah.
You know, my mind's clear, it's sharper, so my time is more efficient, whereas reading late at night when I was already tired, I wasn't retaining as much, it was keeping me awake because I would start thinking about ideas and things, and so, that was a big thing, though. That was hard for me to say, no, I'm not going to read. I've been reading at night my whole life. I mean, I started reading a lot in, like, third grade. And reading in bed is something I've done my whole life. But now I realize it's just not a great practice.
Well, that's great. That's great that you did that.
Yeah,
I've
been very disciplined about when it's time to go to bed, whatever time I set. And mm-hmm. 10 to 10:30 seems to work pretty well for me. Nothing else. I walk into a dark bedroom, get in bed, and go to sleep. No other distractions, you know, in the bedroom when it's time to sleep. And I'll tell you one other simple thing that I'm going to do some more testing on this, but I don't think it's a fluke. Remember I told you I hit 100 twice on the sleep score?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went back and I tried to figure out everything that might have been different those days. And then I tried something and I didn't get 100, but I got two really high scores again. And I did this with a couple days in between, taking a shower at night before I go to bed instead of in the morning. Helps my sleep. It seems like quite a bit. And there's some science behind this, that part of the whole sleep trigger, your body temperature actually starts to drop. And as your body temperature is dropping, that's part of the sleep trigger and the sleep cycle. So by taking a hot shower and raising your body temperature, then it forces itself to cool down, and the cool down process starts that sleep cycle. So there is some science behind this, and I've read it many times, and I thought, oh, that's not going to make much of a difference. But now with these really accurate sleep trackers I'm using, so far, it looks like it is making a pretty significant difference. So I'm going to do some more testing on that one. And, there's the music, so we'll get to a break. We'll come right back. We're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick around. Catch up. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. We're talking about sleep again, one of our big topics. Kim, I've said this before, but it's turning out that sleep and stress, too, they're tied very closely together. It's a lot like everything we learned about diet. Our current lifestyle is almost everything about our lifestyle is screwing up our sleep. And there's no magic bullet. There's no one supplement you're going to take that's going to help you sleep better. It's doing the right things consistently over and over and over. And the longer you do them, the better things get.
Yeah, I agree completely. And all of us could use that.
Yes, absolutely. So anything else? Should we get some calls?
No, let's get to some calls.
All right, let's do that. Let's get started in Texas. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kim. Happy New Year.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hey there.
Hey, I've got a couple of unrelated questions for you. And the first one's got a brief feel-good story. I volunteered at a local animal shelter when I found myself with a forced 12 days off there around Christmas and New Year's. And I rescued this little dog that came in. She had a broken leg. And she was scheduled to have the leg amputated. The vet and the shelter felt that was the cheapest and logistically simplest, you know, thing for them. And I just couldn't let it happen. Family, friend, landlord, the vet. And he said, look, yeah, $4,000 surgery is a bit much, but I've got an $800 procedure. Get me the x-rays. I think we'll see if we can save her leg. Long story short, I brought her home. She's got six pins stuck through her leg, but she's got all four of them, and she's recovering. And I've been trying to find information on what can I add to her food to really help promote this healing. And I thought, you know, I know a guy who probably has some ideas. She's a little husky mix, too.
Okay. So, you know, the one thing I'll tell people is just like when it comes to, you know, true medical procedures with humans, that we have doctors for a reason. I'm not completely anti-medical. For trauma, surgeries, things like that, we have an amazing medical system. Doctors are good people. We just have a broken system. So I don't try to be, you know, a medical professional. I deal with nutrition
right.
and health. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll speak in general. I don't know what we're supposed to do for a dog for aftercare. I'm sure they gave you lots of instructions. You know, I try to keep this really simple. I would try to feed the dog the most nutrient-dense food it will eat. And that's
okay.
The same thing I do for my dog every single day. So, you know, salmon, make sure it's completely cooked. You don't ever want to feed a dog. Like I eat my salmon rare or raw sometimes, sushi. You never want to get a dog undercooked salmon. So make sure when you cook salmon. And I'll tell you something most dogs absolutely go nuts over. If you get a nice big salmon fillet and you take the skin off of it and then put it in an oven on like 200 degrees and just let it go in there. And it'll get really dry and brittle. My dog goes nuts over those things. Like there's no place in the house I can hide them that he doesn't sit there and stare at the door because he knows they're there. So,
you know, I overcooked my salmon fillets and I gave her the skin and it was like the pig ears. It just didn't last as long.
Exactly. And there's lots of nutrition in there, and they can eat the salmon, but, you know, beef liver, chicken liver, you know, almost any time I feed Diesel, I'll pour a little bone broth over his food, so they're getting the nutrients from the bone broth. And so, you know, all those same things that we know are nutrient dense, I just lean more towards protein than fat. So in my diet, I always
that was what I was wondering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go easier on the fat with dogs and go heavier on the protein.
Okay, and then what about like sprinkling some collagen in there too? to help with the bone healing? Would that help?
That's fine. Yep, and probiotics. You can open up probiotic capsules, sprinkle those on their food.
Yeah, she's on antibiotics to prevent the infection. There's like 6 rods going through her leg. So I'm trying to hold it, it together.
Yeah, so you
can
go heavy on the probiotics to help cover that. I'll tell you another thing that Diesel absolutely goes nuts over. It's a nightly thing. There's no way I could ever skip a night. I buy marrow bones that are sliced thin. So, most of the time they're about the size of a silver dollar and maybe a quarter to a half inch thick. They're sliced that way. I get them from a company called U.S. Yep. Wellness Meats.
Okay.
And they have a bunch of different bones. These are called thin marrow bones. And I buy like 20 bags at a time, and I put them in the freezer. And I just pull them right out of the freezer and give them to Diesel. It's like a bone marrow popsicle. And he goes absolutely nuts over those. The bone marrow is really good for them, and the natural bone when they chew on it keeps their teeth clean. So it's just a really healthy treat for them.
Okay, I'll look that up. Excellent, thank you. And the final part of this feel good story is the vet. Like I said, he's a family friend. He's helping out. He's going to try to handle as much of this at cost as possible. And I managed to raise $600 through GoFundMe to contribute to it. Yeah, and she's just awesome. She's only 18 months old. She deserved a better shot. She seems to love the truck. She's ready to get in and out, even though I can't let her. So I think it feels good. It's a great start to the year. I've got a friend who is, I feel, heading right down that traditional path. Including having been diagnosed with gout like 16, 17 years ago, he's managed to avoid the traditional what do they call those? Biologics? The typical protocol. So no nuts, no this, no that. And I'm worried he's having like blood sugar issues about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. We finally found the carb protein combo that he's comfortable eating to try to stave off that 2-3 in the morning low blood sugar bout. And I'm trying to find a way to convince him that it's not those foods. It seems like, and I remember you talking to somebody, so what can I tell him to convince him that there's a better way and he'll be happier with what he's eating? He does eat a low-fat diet, and he's overweight, and,
Well, the one thing I have very little advice on is how to convince anybody of anything.
There's that. I guess I need the words. Yeah. I need a better ammunition, I guess, would be the way to put it.
The one thing if you could get him to do a little research on is that the medical community blames gout on the foods that aggravate gout. And they clearly do. So they'll tell you to avoid beef, avoid seafood, avoid anything with purines. And if you do that, you do get less symptoms. There's no question.
Okay.
The problem
the gout, but they don't cause it.
They don't cause it. Correct.
Okay,
and that's
good.
Where the confusion
All
comes
right.
in. Everybody believes, if those foods aggravate it, they must have caused it. No, it's very clear what causes it. High fructose consumption is what causes gout.
Okay. 2 arrows in my quiver. Excellent. I had the bow. And I was taking aim, and I went to grab it in my quiver, and I went, I got nothing. But pure faith and a general rocking.
high fructose, and in the beginning, it does make sense to avoid some of those foods. But ultimately, you want to get those foods back in the diet because they are the nutrient-dense foods. We don't want to be eating low-fat and, avoiding the proteins. But we've got to clear up the gout first. So it's almost the idea of the last caller with diverticulitis. We've got to get rid of a lot of things first to let the body heal. Right.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Well, excellent. excellent. That's what I needed. Actually, I didn't have the reason. So it's like, okay, I know that these foods aren't the cause, but I can't figure. I don't remember what the cause was. And so, okay, great. Thank you so much. And you guys, my life has changed for the better across the board between the business and the trucking and my health. And you know, you guys are leaving an amazing legacy behind. And I'm going to try to spread it as much as I can.
You're awesome,
well,
Sarah.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. There's the music. We've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more stuff. Stick around. Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me, and we're going to get right back to the phone calls. We are heading off to Indiana. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin and Kim. Before I get to the health insurance, Association health insurance plans, the stock market dropped 508 points on October 19th, 1987, from 2246 to 1738, it was 22.6%. And in today's market, that means it would drop down to about 19,500 in one day. So we're about 11 or 12 times greater right now of a market size than we were then. So that tells you, you know, that would be a that would be a panic situation. It'd be like these Bitcoin guys were last week when theirs dropped 40%
in
an hour, you know. So, but as far as the association health plans, it's not going to take quite as much as you had said. This was actually an executive order from our president a few months ago, and the story this week was from the Department of Labor. They are formulating the rules so that this can happen.
Oh, okay.
Because it is an executive order, which means that Congress, you know, really has no say in it other than the fact that they could come in and pass a law saying it couldn't happen. But any future president with the swipe of a pen could do what Trump has done to all of the Obama bad regulations. They could make it go away, you know, but then I have a feeling pitchforks would be in their future, because by then the genie will be out of the bottle. People will have actually really good health insurance at that point that really works for them and not for the doctors and not for the insurance companies, pharmaceuticals. It'll actually work for me and you at that point. So I think you better go ahead and pretty soon try to consider getting together a group. I mean, there's so many groups out here now. Just think, the NRA would have 3 million members that would be possibilities going into one health plan. Ohio's got 160,000 members. NASDAQ probably has 70 or 80,000 members. I mean, I would imagine small carriers. Think about all the different ones. I mean, you know, you may look at it and find that there's enough associations out there if they're doing their due diligence. So you may want to talk with Dave Owen over at NASDAQ or talk with some of your, you know, Mark Reddick or some of the people over at, that you know over at OIDA, and, you know, find out what are y'all's plans. you know, and because yeah, it needs to be done by somebody. If not them, I mean, I'm sure you try to find a little more time in your schedule to do it. but somebody needs to do it.
The idea has always been on my shelf because it was there once, you know, so it's something that I've talked with other groups about so that we could get our numbers up pretty quickly. You know, we have 60 or 70,000 members on our website. There are a couple big groups I work with that I've thrown around this association idea before, not just for health insurance either, for a lot of things. I think we're still lacking an association in this industry that really focuses on business and education, which is what almost every other association in every other industry specializes in. We don't seem to have anybody that does that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think you're on the right track, but I think you may want to, if they come out with these rules in the next 2 or 3 months, I'm hoping to see sometimes later this year, viable plans out there. And because all the big insurance companies, they're going to see a group that size and they're going to see the opportunity to let's get something that'll pattern right. And business people will be looking at the possibility of having HSAs and more catastrophic type policies than having the comprehensive, head to toe, womb to tomb, policies the government wants you to have.
Well, and that may be the difference, and that may be the reason that I wouldn't align myself with another group. Just based on principle alone, if I were to do something, I'm very sure if it works out, because insurance can get tricky, but my want would be that we only offer HSAs and high deductible plans, because I think that's what everybody should have. I think that's what it's going to take to fix this problem in the long term. So I would be hesitant, because a lot of other groups might want to offer all kinds of plans and all kinds of different options. And I think I would go with, look, we're just going to be real clear here. We're going to do what we think is right for everybody. And a lot of people may not like that. So we'll see. You know what? You reminded me. I reported on this a couple months ago. And I said then it was an executive order. I think what confused me is I was scrolling through headlines the other day and I saw that article where they were formulating the rules, and I tried taking a shortcut. I didn't read the article. I only read the headline and I assumed they were talking about Congress. But you're absolutely right. I reported it was an executive order.
Yeah, that was the Department of Labor. They're the ones that would be tasked with doing that. Another thing, if you're going to be, like you say, with principle, doing it the way you're looking at doing it, I would urge you, and I'll probably send you an email with contact information. In Wichita, Kansas, there's a group, Dr. Josh Umber has it. He has over 20,000 members in his group there in town. This is for everyday health needs. So you can just have a catastrophic policy and then have his group, but they have all doctors in there. It's $10 a month for children, $50 a month for adults, and you have unlimited visits. You could go in there every day for the year, and you don't have to pay anything extra. They have they charge 15 or 20 cents for x-rays. They have all the equipment. they actually dispense the medications for a couple of bucks for a whole 30-day supply. Because they negotiate 95% reductions from the pharmaceutical companies, but that an actual group like that for the everyday medical needs, and then a catastrophic for just God forbid, all of a sudden you find you've got cancer and you got to fight it with hundreds of thousands of dollars of somebody else's money, and that's what insurance companies that's what insurance is using other people's money. You would have that, and your catastrophic plan would be so inexpensive at that point, because you wouldn't have the nickel and dime every day that the insurance company is having to go through all of these claims for small stuff. It would all be for the big stuff at that point. So I'll try to get contact information of his for you, because he actually sets these groups up all over the country now in addition to having – he's had his group for a number of years there, and they've got some of the best health care in the country right there because of him and his group. And they've got every doctor, every different every different discipline is in there. So I think, like I say, there's a lot of positivity coming in health care if we get the insurance side of it straight. And that's what's been wrong all along. So that and all the natural stuff and everything that y'all do and the other groups that are more naturally based, like, you know, the NTA, I think the future looks pretty good for medicine overall.
You know, it does. And you bring up some really good points. I love that model. Absolutely love it. So please send me any information you have. I've seen some things like that. I'd like to see this one. You know, if we sat down and you know, I look at the doctor that my son is working for now as an NTP. He's in a doctor's office. She's a full MD. She has all the access to testing. She can write prescriptions if she needs to, but she's a big believer in, you know, the natural side of letting the body heal itself first. That's why she hired Michael to work on the nutrition side. Her vision for her practice is that she has a comprehensive practice all in one place with, you know, things like meditation and acupuncture and nutrition. And she's even talking about having, you know, a cafe in the building that serves that kind of food, and health coaches, so that there's a whole team and everybody's working from the natural approach first, but she has the knowledge and the experience on the medical side. I think that's awesome. I think if you combined that with the idea of the health sharing ministries, which are pretty awesome, and a catastrophic plan, we could make catastrophic plans dirt cheap, and we could have people be a whole lot healthier and drive the cost of healthcare way down.
Definitely.
All right. Good stuff, Steve. Thanks for the updates there. I've got to get to a break. The music's playing. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Ruff. All right, a quick heads up, we're heading into the fourth segment. I may have room for one more question. So if you want to jump in, press 1 on your phone right now, and I should be able to get to you in this last segment. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. This is Destination Health. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Kim's here with me. We're off to Arizona. Rod, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, I got a question real quick about one of these elixirs that they're advertising, you know, one of them snake oil things, a cure-all deal, and it comes from the marijuana plant, and it's the part of the plant that doesn't make you high and blah, blah, blah. You just take a dropper full of that. And they claim it knocks down your anxieties, which calms you, which is more or less what you're talking about. We're after better sleep, better rest, less stress. Have you heard about it? What do you think
right
about it?
Well, you said it was a quick question, and it was. My answer could be about 2 or 3 hours if we had that much time, because I've read extensively on this, and I've actually done a lot of testing. Yeah. So
I haven't heard you talk about it. That's why I was – I hadn't heard you talk about it. That's why I was curious.
Yeah, when I explain it, you'll probably understand why I don't spend a whole lot of time talking about it. There's another thing that I've experimented with extensively for sleep that I don't talk about because drivers can't take advantage of it. I'm in Oregon. Cannabis is legal here. I've said there's no absolute, you know, one supplement you can take that's going to help you asleep. That's not exactly true. Cannabis works amazing. But I've also verified that it does lower your quality of sleep. So for me, and I know this freaks people out, but I will use cannabis to go to sleep when, like, if I've really worked out too hard and my body is just really sore, or the other day when I thought I was getting sick, everybody around me was sick and it felt like I was starting to get it, and I said I slept for 20 hours and I woke up and I was fine. The way I did that was about every 4 or 5 hours I woke up and ingested some cannabis and went right back to sleep. It's an amazing sleep aid. Now, that's true cannabis with THC. It does get you high, but it is an amazing sleep aid. But I don't talk about it because drivers can't do it. I mean, not even in the legal states, because you just can't have it in your system at all. And it's unfortunate that we've done that. You know, you're allowed to drink alcohol and drive as long as the alcohol isn't in your system when you're driving. That may change, but I think it's going to be a very, very long time. So here's the thing. There are two different plants in this group. One is the cannabis plant, which is marijuana, and the other one is the hemp plant. They're very, very similar, except hemp doesn't produce THC. It produces all the other compounds, but there's no THC in hemp, yeah. So you can't get high from it. And if you consume a product from hemp, nothing shows up on a drug test because all they're testing for is THC. So the other compound that's it, and there are thousands of compounds in both cannabis and hemp that we know very little about because our government screwed us again. And, you know, they made both of these plants so illegal that they were classified the same way heroin was classified, and it was illegal to even do any testing on any of these products. So we know almost nothing. So all of the new research is just that. It's very, very new research because there was no medical testing being done on any of these compounds because it was illegal. So here's what I've found in some limited testing that I've done. CBD oil or CBD extracts are what you're talking about. They are claiming they cure everything from cancer to dementia. And there is some scientific proof behind that. What I've found in some limited testing is if you get the CBD oil from hemp, which is the legal version in all states and drivers could use it, I'm not seeing any big short-term effects. And testing for long-term effects is really difficult. I mean, it's not something I'm going to be able to do. So when I test supplements or, you know, foods or whatever, I'm looking for a real short-term effect. You know, cannabis is easy. I smoke it and I go to sleep. That's pretty straightforward. And not a whole lot of testing required there. I tried the CBD oil because they said it should reduce anxiety, help you sleep, all those things. When I got the CBD oil from hemp, I saw almost no results short term. If I use CBD oil from true marijuana that does have traces of THC in it, now it's not enough to get you high, but it's enough that it would probably show up on a drug test, so I would never recommend a driver do it. Those I actually get some results from. I don't notice a lot sleep. In fact, there's some evidence that too much CBD could actually interfere with sleep. So you can get different strains of marijuana that some are really high in THC, some are higher in CBD, and they all have different effects. there's a strain on the market out of Colorado called Charlotte's Web that is very, very low in THC, so it won't get you high. It's very, very high in CBD, and they named it Charlotte's Web because there's a story about this, a documentary on TV. A little girl named Charlotte had seizures so bad, they tried everything for years and years. The girl couldn't talk, she couldn't walk, she couldn't learn anything because she was having hundreds of seizures a day. They gave her the oil from this marijuana with the high CBD. She stopped seizing almost immediately. Now she walks, she talks, it's just an amazing story. So it seems to me, with what I've seen so far, that the effects of CBD that are derived from true marijuana seem to be more effective than the CBD oil that's derived from hemp. Now, the hemp products might have long-term benefits, but it's just impossible for me to test those kind of things.
All right. That answers my plan of action. Second part of my question was if it would show up in drug tests. So I think I'll just leave it all alone till more testing comes around. Thanks for your answer.
Yeah. As far as the drug testing, as long as you can buy it in a state that marijuana is not legal. Like in Oregon, you got to be really careful what you're buying because it could have THC in it because THC is legal here. But if you're in a state like Texas where it's absolutely not legal, and you can buy CBD oil, then you know for sure it doesn't have THC and it won't show up on a drug test. I've seen some reports and some results where it really does help, and I believe it does. It's just one of those things that I can't show any real quick short-term benefits. So that's about all I can say on that one right now. What are you laughing about, Kim?
I'm loving the show today. It's such a diverse. We have hit about everything. It's awesome. Love it. I love it. I love the questions that people call in with.
Yeah. They really are good questions. You know, we have people that are out there reading and paying attention to things, and, you know, they're doing their own research. I absolutely love that.
And you, I keep always telling you before, I'm like, how do you retain this stuff? You do. It's awesome. You can tell in your voice that you love it.
You know, and I think that's it. You know, when you find that thing that you're, if I had my choice of natural talents, I wish I could sing, but I can't. So, you know, I don't think any help would do me any good in that case. So I'll just be grateful for the natural talent I do have, which is the ability to read, understand, and retain things. I mean, I know that's my strength, and I'm grateful for it. So I'll just leave my singing to the shower and the car.
There you go.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to wrap this up. We had some calls to get to, but we are out of time. So I would encourage everybody, download our app. We haven't talked about our app in a while. Really, really easy to find. Do a Google search for Audio Road app. Audio Road, one word, AUDIORoad, no space, app. And do a Google search. The top two hits. First one will be Android. Second one will be iOS. It's a free app. It does one thing. It does it really well. You open up the app, and you can listen to our show. You listen to it live. You listen to all our back shows. You can listen to Destination Health, Questions, The Power Hour. Larry Wingett and I do a monthly podcast now. That one's on the app. Really easy way to listen, and it's free. So go get the app. Check out the website. We're always adding new stuff over there. It's letstruck.com. If you are interested in the tax plan, I've started a group on Facebook so we can keep everything in one place. When you're on Facebook, do a search for Understanding the New Tax Law in Trucking. That'll get you to my group on Facebook. Or go to my page and you should be able to find some links on there as well. Thanks, Kim, and thanks to everybody. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy.
always do the hard work, master the journey. Kevin Robinson.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you back here this weekend for the live show. Oh, also on Friday, I think it's Friday. Yeah, Friday, I will be co-hosting the entire 3 hours of Freewheeling. So tune in there and let your friends know. Thanks. We'll see you then.